Lose weight, save money, get organized. How about jazzing up your list of New Year's resolutions with some resolutions for your house? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. He's made a list of resolutions he thinks you should consider. Some are simple fixes and some are a little more complicated. We also want to know what projects you're planning in the new year. And of course, Bill will answer your questions. Send us an email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is in the house today. He's here with us, and he has compiled a list of New Year's resolutions for your home.
Especially for Fifi LaRue.
He's got a fan, and he's happy.
Woo-hoo.
All right.
And got a roadie.
And we want to know about your resolutions for your home improvement projects as well, or whatever projects you're working on this year in 2013. You can send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Of course, we'll be taking your questions as the hour goes on as well. Happy New Year, Bill.
Happy New Year, Charity.
Thank you so much for coming in. And you have prepared this list for us.
Yes, I have. And I have it written down, too, which is really good.
Is this a New Year's resolution for
you? Yeah, I'm pretty organized today. You see, I only brought three magazines with me today instead of that big old, briefcase that normally, or duffel bag full of magazines. So I've cut it down a little bit.
Wow.
Yep.
Organization scaling back for the new year?
Well, at least for this month. We'll see how it goes.
All right. So where should we start around the house?
You've seen the list. Where do you want to start? You want to start at the
beginning?
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at trim work in the house. Since we want to award the house for being so good to us in the whole last year and hopefully this coming year, look around the house and see what pieces of trim work that maybe we've neglected to replace, or nail holes that need to be finished, touch up the paint, especially in the base molding where that super new robot vacuum cleaner that people get buying that bangs into the baseboard and marks it all up. Touch up those little things. They're just – it doesn't take long to do those little things that you see all year long that bug you, and I have a lot of those at home, I'm reminded. But to just replace just those little pieces or especially like nail holes where the trim work has been put up over a period of years and it's this little flaw. You see it every day so you don't notice it. But other people do. And so
do? When you go into people's homes, Bill,
I do.
Critiquing us. You're not just loving us for who we are.
Where it really matters is just saving labor. Because every time I do the vacuuming, that I go around the window thinking it's a dead bug, it's actually that stupid hole because I can't see very well where I think it's a bug, but it's a hole where I didn't fill it in. So, if I figured the labor in on this deal. Even small pieces are trimmed down where, like maybe we have a transition from carpet to ceramic tile or hardwood floor to ceramic tile. A lot of times those get a lot of wear and tear and they chip or the wood starts coming up and, they might be getting slivers or there may be some nails showing, especially if there are little kids around or you catch your foot. Sharp corners on base molding. Maybe this is a time to quit whining about every time you hit your toe on it and maybe just to file it down and sand it so it's not so sharp the next time you hit it.
These are a bunch of little things.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't
take
a whole lot of time.
No, it isn't, And the next one is tightening up, like say the hinges on your squeaky doors. You're trying to sneak around in the house or let somebody sleep and you're pulling a door and you think, why don't I fix it? Now, it's kind of funny. This one was because I was my wife asked last night, well, what are you going to talk about tomorrow? And I said, well, hey, I'm all prepared this time. And I bring this up, here's number two already. And I said, well, she says, well, what are you going to put on those hinges? I said, well, you can use like Vaseline, something like petroleum jelly, or you can use a bar soap, or you can go to Napa. They have, which I didn't know until looking up a lot of this stuff, but they have a door latch lubricant that you can buy, that's really good and works. And then she says, why didn't you use that on our hinges? And that's how come we got that stain on the carpet where, you know, I kind of like WD-40. Well, that's not the thing you should use because you use a little of it. And I like, you know, it's like oil in a car. I figure if you use 3 quarts, might as well use 6. But I sprayed on there. And now I've got this spot on the carpet where I sprayed WD-40 to quiet the hinges down. So don't use like WD-40. And if you do, if you're dumb enough to do that, put something on the carpet so it catches it and wipe it down quick. Or graphite. A lot of people use graphite, and then you get that dust. Mm-hmm. And then you get, you know, it just gets on your clothes, and it's messy. And when you look at a set of hinges, a lot of times you'll see that darkness where the two hinges overlap each other in the movement. And it's not the hinge pin that's causing that. That's the two pieces of metal on the hinge rubbing against each other. And, of course, you're going to always, you know, after a year you'll have some of that. So just clean it off. But try to stay away from any of the – like I say, WD-40 again, but probably the easiest one to use is like petroleum jelly. And if you do have some doors in older homes that the door swings on its own, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, and a lot of older homes develop those, you can pull one of the pins out, and usually probably the top one, because it's easiest to get to, is take that one out, take it to a bench or concrete. Don't do this on your ceramic floor, but you just tap that with a hammer right in the, like if it's a 4-inch long pin, right in the middle, tap it to give it just a small bend so that it causes a little bit of a bind. And so then that may be enough to keep that door from, you know, just letting its weight swing around.
I'm going to do that at my parents' house. I've always felt like there's a door there, and it was on my childhood bedroom that you just can't keep shut. And I've always decided that it's something to do with the latch, but maybe that's it.
That's what it is. I think my father-in-law wants one that goes faster so that when I go out of room, it helps me, you know?
Don't let the door hit you.
Yeah, don't let the door hit me on the way out, no. You know, but that's something that's, you know, very simple to do. And you know, those squeaky doors, that are just very, very frustrating. You know, another one with the doors, too, is sometimes that we have a tendency to over-tighten the screws on the hinges. The hinges will come loose a little bit, and then, okay, I'll give it a couple turns. You do that a few times, and there's really no wood for the screw to grab a hold of. If you want to tighten those hinges back up in the doors, you can pull the screw out that's there, and then please get a brass screw instead of just grabbing a drywall screw, but grab a longer brass screw so it's still the same color. I mean, if you have brass hinges. But screws that match all the rest, but get one a little bit longer, and go that route first. And if you wear out all those, then you may have to come back and start filling the holes up. Now, if you want to start all over, you know, if you want to fill those holes back in, kind of the old, it's tried and true. Is a lot of guys still use like wooden matches, if you can still find them anymore, but wooden matchsticks or toothpicks, is they will take or a small piece of wood that they'll take a utility knife and cut off of a scrap piece, and they'll put wood back in that hole along with glue. Don't try to use like wood filler. That'll crack, or sometimes they're soft, but basically what you're doing is you're putting that, you're filling that hole back up with wood again, and it's solid wood that you're putting the screw back in. And probably,
so even a toothpick will make enough difference that you can,
yeah, it's,
you can
amazing.
Catch on to it.
Yeah, but the best thing to do is fill the hole up completely. Not just, you know, I'm glad you said that. Not just one toothpick, but fill the hole completely, and then pre-drill for this screw, because we're always in a big rush. You know, you get some of these screws that you see in hinges, they're pretty wide. I mean, they're like an eighth of an inch, and then we wonder how come the jam splits out when we're trying to horse it in there. All you have to do is pre-drill that hole. You know, just it's a little bit about the size of the shaft without the threads in the wood, so it doesn't split out.
All right.
And, you know, that's another one that they aren't very hard to do. And they're, when you're working on those hinges, if the door maybe touches the top or bottom, the gap where the door goes into the door jamb itself, that little gap is called the reveal. You want that gap to be the same all the way around, not rubbing or real big somewhere. Well, if you really look at the hinges, if you think, you know, if I loosen that bottom one up a little bit and maybe move it over, the bottom of the door will go over, and then the top upper left will go up. And so you can put cardboard shims. A lot of people just take an old cereal box, and they'll take a utility knife, and they'll make a shim the same size as the hinge, and they'll put it behind, you know, that hinge to kind of shim it out a little bit. It's kind of fun to play with that stuff anyway. But it does help to sometimes have a person there to help you, like if you take the door completely off. Yeah, that's when you find out it weighs 100 pounds and you're standing there in your bare feet trying to hold it up with your toes. And, you know, people have done it, know what I'm talking about.
All right. And also, you recommend getting somebody in to look at the ductwork.
Yes. You know, especially probably now, some of the guys of the HVAC people have, you know, kind of gone through that initial huge rush, everybody wanting their heating and cooling systems, you know, up and running. Now's a good time to, you know, when we hit this, like say now, it's pretty chilly out. Your room should be pretty close to the same temperature. There's two theories here. Sometimes the builder gets blamed because there's not enough insulation or the windows are leaky or something. That's why this room's cooler. Or it's the ductwork is not getting the temperature that you want into that room. So kind of liken if the ductwork is not designed correctly or somebody is on an older home, you know, kind of cobbled everything up and put in different duct and everything and different equipment – Have a professional come in there and take a look at it and say, you know, if we redesign this ductwork from here to there, that room actually will be within 5 degrees of the one next to it. And a lot of people, especially in two stories, are having problems with that design. And a lot of new houses, especially because plans come to builders and they seem like the designers forgot that plumbers, electricians, and heating people have to work inside that envelope, they never leave enough room for the contractors to run their equipment. They have to be creative, try to find places where to put it. It shouldn't be that way. The room should be designed around comfort and efficiency first.
All right. And you also recommend if you've got a drippy faucet or a leaky toilet, take care of it.
Yeah, that's what I was
Don't
doing all day
yesterday.
Don't just
jiggle the handle.
That's right. Don't just jiggle it. That's what I did yesterday. And when I built Mom's house in 1977, that half bath seemed a lot bigger than when I was laying on my back underneath the vanity yesterday. We were going to replace the toilet.
Have you been growing, Bill?
You know, just around the midsection, just a little bit. But it was tough, you know, and you're not near as bendable either. But, you know, a lot of times instead of having to replace the toilet, all you have to do is just replace the, you know, the guts on the inside. And what happens, I have noticed that this one had been worked on before and it wasn't never fixed. And a plumber had worked on it. But what would happen is some of these toilet tanks on the back, they have insulation. And over a period of time, it looks like it's porcelain, but it's still insulation. And it was holding some of the mechanisms away from, you know, being straight up and down. So that's why it was dripping. So it was pretty easy to fix, actually. You know, Mom did a good job of helping me, handing me the right tools at the right time. So it actually went pretty well.
That's great. Off to a good start.
Yep.
All right. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We've been talking about resolutions to make on behalf of your home in 2013. We'd like to hear about your resolutions, but also your questions. Bill is here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send us some email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today. He's been sharing some resolutions we can make on behalf of our homes. He's got a couple more to share with us, but he's also here to take your questions.
What?
Yeah. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And earlier we were talking about filling in those holes if you've got a loose screw around the house. And Craig from, which
Dennis.
I know you do. I know that Craig from Cedar Rapids has a suggestion for how he likes to do that. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your suggestion?
Well, I've always had that problem, too, with an older house. And so I played golf for a long time. And so I decided to use golf tees to fill in the hinge holes, you know.
Yeah.
And those things just work tremendous because they're really strong. And they just work.
Yeah, because they're a harder wood, too.
Right.
You're right.
And one other thing, my resolution is to keep monitoring this nearly white roof that I put on my 10-year-old ranch house.
Yeah.
And last summer, and you know how hot it was, I wouldn't have had to run my air conditioner at all if I didn't want to.
You know, that's a very good point. It really is. I've always kind of felt maybe the same way that you do on this is, you know, if we had more white roofs, you know, we'd really be able to cut the energy use down. But it's just that curb appeal. And that's all it is people – we just have this when we –
Well, I think it's something that people just need to get used to, though, don't you? Because it's just something we haven't seen a lot. I don't think it's unattractive.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I don't like shingling off them because, boy, you mean when you're shingling those, you get burned underneath the chin, underneath your nose. It's just – it reflects off of it. But
keeping your house a whole lot cooler.
It is, you know. But, you know, like you say, it's just – or we're used to. You go down to Arizona, it's all tile roofs, and we go down there, hey, it looks great. Well, if they were white roofs, we'd probably say, hey, that looks great. You know, it's a really good point.
Well, with the steel roofs, it's something I think people are adjusting their expectations for what a roof will look like.
You know, I think probably in about 25 years, probably half of the new houses will have steel roofs on them because and they'll be lighter colored. They're not going to be these really weird dark blue. I mean, that's okay for commercial, but for residential, no.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for your call. And did you want to slip in another resolution?
Yeah, just two of them. I was thinking about this last night as well. Is, you know, in our closets, a lot of us have just a screw-in light bulb, an incandescent light bulb. And that's really scary to think about, you know, because when you replace those, if they're still, you know how hot they are. They do start a lot of fires, and in a closet, you're supposed to have a light fixture made for storage areas, so a bulb that's enclosed. So, you know, that would be one thing I may do this year. I've got mine all. They don't have the bare bulb like that in mine. Mine are protected. But if you do have the bare bulb, you may want to think about getting a fixture for that because when you cram a lot of stuff up on that top shelf, especially if it's plastic, you know, it can start a fire. Also is if you've brought things in from the fall, any kind of chemicals or fluids that may be combustible, please make sure they're not anywhere near, you know, like, say, the water heater or the return air for your furnace system.
If you put a compact fluorescent bulb in the closet, would that take care of the problem?
No.
Still too hot?
Yeah. Well, they're cool, but that's not the purpose because if they break, then you've got the mercury issue, which is just as bad, or the glass.
So protect them.
Yeah,
anyway.
Nice try. Yeah. Try to sneak that one by on me. Yeah.
You know, my husband said he was going to listen today, so when I came home with a to-do list 3 miles long, he'd know where it all came from. Now you know.
And don't a friend of mine yesterday, he's got a beard that makes ZZ Top look like a pup, and he was drywalling, and he said, I'm going to go take a shower. And, of course, how drywall gets when it gets wet. It just turns into mud in his beard and his long hair and everything. And his wife blamed their, like, 2-year-old son for turning the water heater off. Now, I don't know about that deal, that little red button on her. She, yeah, he shut that off. No, I don't think so.
All right, and you had one more?
Nope,
that was it. Okay. All right, let's get to the calls. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Carol is on the line from Clive. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have a question about this ductwork they're doing nowadays of lining it so that it's more efficient. And is it truly as efficient as what the advertisements say?
Well, I would really do a lot of research because there are some liners that are working. There are some that are, let's say, maybe a little bit overblown as far as representation. It's like anything. It depends on the installer. Their credibility. There are some liners that do work, but a lot of it comes down to more of a design than the liner on the ductwork. And unless you're talking about an exhaust going out of a fireplace where they reline it with ceramic, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I think you're talking inside, right?
Right. I have a house that was built in '72, and I find the upstairs bedrooms are quite cool, even though. It's 73 downstairs.
Yeah, that's a design issue there. That's where pressurization and the amount of return and supply to certain rooms, that's where you would want a person that actually knows how to design ductwork. That's why some of the new energy codes are really pushing that you have to do a manual D when you get a permit for a new home. That the ductwork has to be designed to get the air, like, so that then your house would be, let's say, 72 in all the rooms upstairs and in the basement. But to the builder, though, back in the 70s, we did not, you know, we would just run ductwork to the upstairs, and nobody really ever designed anything for the basement. We just would kind of cut a couple holes in. And so houses from, you know, from that time period and all the way into the 80s, it just kind of finished off the basement and never really did anything with the ductwork. And most of them never even told the heating person. So I would get a hold of a, you know, a good heating and cooling person to come in and take a look at it for you. And they'd probably be able to balance that all out so that you would not have any issues.
Okay, so that would be more someone that is in the business of selling furnaces and the like?
Yes, yes, a heating and cooling person. Okay. Doing the ductwork, lining it, isn't really going to help your temperatures any.
Oh, and there are things they can do even though the house has been built?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. A lot of times there are. There may be some remodeling involved, but at least you'd have some decent temperatures.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
You bet.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for your call, Carol. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tom is on the line next from Fairfield. Hi, Tom.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Well, one thing that happens with especially older houses I'm experiencing is that the drains run slower and slower until it's an issue. And I've had pretty good luck, first of all, with drain cleaner and second line of defense, putting a snake in there. But I got one that apparently has corners that the little snake won't go through. And a couple of questions, are there different grades of drain cleaner or different grades of auger they'll get around a corner? I hope this is not too technical about plumbing, but if you want to have a go at that, I'd be interested.
Well, you know, I think with the way that the plumbers have gone is they're looking more, you know, at drain inspection so they can actually see what may be causing an issue at a corner, because corners should be fairly easy for anything to go around. Otherwise, they wouldn't be working correctly. You know, they should be either a – you know, the tightest obviously would be a 90, but they would maybe go with a, like a street 90, which is a 90, but it's a longer distance around that originally. So a lot of plumbers are doing, they'll send a snake with a camera on the end and so they can video. We were doing that about a month or so ago on a project up in Fort Dodge where you could actually see where the pipes had settled and kind of overlapped themselves at a joint. I would try to stay away from, you know, the caustic drain cleaners a lot of times, and they're kind of a temporary fix. I'd really rather find out what's causing it. Usually it's just, you know, tree roots that somehow – it's amazing how those tree roots get in there. But a lot of times, you know, you're just going to have to somebody go, you know, a plumber to come in there, and then they'll run a system through like a rotor, you know, Roto-Rooter is a trade name, but something that'll shear them off. But to try to stay away from the chemicals, because a lot of times they may cause some – especially if they're very caustic, they may cause some deterioration of the piping and some of the joints at a later date. But then they're tough to get out of the water when they get to the treatment system too.
All right, Tom, good luck with that. Thank you so much for your call. And let's get to some email, because we've got some email questions right now. This is from Barb. She says, what can I do to warm up my cold slab kitchen floor? Right now it has vinyl, but I want to change it. I thought about in-floor heat, but I don't like ceramic tile. Any suggestions?
Yeah, you can you can put the in-floor heat in. You can put wood over that. And there are some other systems that you could go ahead and put in-floor heat. You know, we're talking now, since it's remodeling a lot of times, it will probably be electric. And, you know, most builders are very familiar, especially the flooring people are very familiar with that. They can embed like these electric mats into a cement, and then they'll put a liner over the top, and then or a board, and then they can put vinyl back down if they really don't. But you know, you could switch instead of having vinyl, maybe look at marmoleum or linoleum.
What is marmoleum?
Marmoleum is more of a green product that looks kind of like linoleum, but it's made from natural ingredients. And then the old original linoleum,
right?
Which a lot of people are going back to.
And so you said wood. You could do a wood floor over an electric heat source?
Yeah,
okay, or a cork?
You know, yeah, it's amazing, you know, because I was always, you know, I was always thought, well, why would I want to put wood over water? You know, you've got to get past that. You know, the technology has changed so much, but you know, if you go, I would suggest, Barb, that you go to your, you know, to a flooring store and say, you know, I do not want ceramic, but once you have a maybe you don't want ceramic because it feels cold, but once you have a radiant floor system underneath it, the ceramic, oh my gosh, I mean, that's just really, really nice. But, you know, I would go to your flooring person. They'll help you out on that one.
All right. Here's another email. This is from Lindsay in Des Moines. She says, Bill, please help. A couple months ago, while moving into my new apartment, I decided to put up a decorative shelf and place a candle on it. Smart idea. I had to light that candle one night, and unexpectedly, the shelf falls off the wall, and lo and behold, blue wax got all over my white walls. Please help. What can I do to get this off my wall? I've tried almost everything.
Oh, man. See, didn't I always say, please don't bring a paint question up?
Well, if it, I thought that one might stump you, Bill. So I did do a little research online while you were chatting before.
Yeah, sure. Embarrass Bill minute. Okay.
No, here's a suggestion, though, that I found that seems like it would work, and you can give your input on this. To use a hairdryer.
Yeah.
And plain white paper towel, so you don't have any possibility of the pattern from the paper towel getting on the wall. But if you use a hairdryer and plain white paper towels, you can melt it and blot. And then the blogger that I found suggests after you get the wax off the wall, you're still going to have stains,
mm-hmm.
using a magic eraser to get the stain off.
Yes. Yeah. You know, okay, you bet.
Boom.
Man, that, I tell you what, that's exactly what I had written here in my notes.
Right.
But yeah, hair dryer.
Just don't get melt
too, it. Don't get too close.
Right.
Yeah.
But you've got to melt it somehow because you can't. If you scrape that off, then you're going to sand it, then you're going to have to repaint
you're
it.
You're going to have a mess. Yeah,
right.
That's about the only way, like you say, that's the only way you can do it is to melt it and blot it off. And a hair dryer would be the safest, like you say, because it hopefully you're not going to get so close that you get the paper. Remember, drywall is paper on the face. So,
right. And if you didn't blot it, you'd end up with streaks of wax running down. So you'd have to work on it.
Yeah, or just go ahead and put a whole bunch of wax all over and make
That's
it into
true.
A really cool-looking
that
scene.
That could be really neat. Lindsay, you might enjoy that.
Yeah.
And you'd be a trendsetter.
Yes.
All right. Let's get to back to the phones. Kelly's on the line next from Davenport. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning. My question is, I just moved into a new home about 9 months ago, and I'm noticing some odd little things, and I'm wondering if they should be the contractor's responsibility. One of them, in our tile shower, there's some cracks in the grout.
Yes.
In the basement, there's also some cracks in the concrete floor. It's unfinished.
Okay.
And around my white wide trim, I also see where the nail hole indentations are.
Okay.
Are those things I should have him fix?
Yeah, the concrete floor, you know, the concrete always cracks. It depends on how bad they are. But make the builder aware. But, yeah, the cracks, how old's the house?
9 months.
The white trim, yep, that's a cosmetic issue, but it should – you know, you shouldn't be able to see the indentations. They should have had maybe been filled one more time. And the builder, if he's listening, he's probably getting mad at me, but that's too bad. the tile, the shower, yeah, there shouldn't be any cracks. A lot of times it's an underlayment issue, or maybe the grout dried down too much on them. But hopefully you have a list of all of the contractors involved in the house, should have come with the house, and you can get with wherever the tile and the grout were purchased from, and you can go to them too as well to find out what the actual steps that those manufacturers required and see if they were followed. Because sometimes it could be a product, and so the builder, you know, in good faith, put it on correctly, but sometimes we do get some bad batches of product. Ran into that last year on some grout that just was not performing like it should. I you know, go into it though with a real positive attitude though, because that's what's mm-hmm. Most builders do want to do their best, and sometimes just things happen. So
right, and you don't want to put them on the defensive
away. No, you don't want to, because they're people just like us. So don't get them mad at you, but bring up your concerns, especially at 9 months. Yeah, try to get all this stuff done mm-hmm. before the 1 year.
Well, and the other thing is, he made a little window seat in his bedrooms using two boards that were, you know, fused together.
Okay.
And I can see the crack in between.
Okay.
And as the kids jump up on it, should I have him replace that with a single board, or is it just kind of stuck with it?
Well, it also depends on the humidity, too, in the house, because sometimes I don't know what the board looks like, but sometimes it will dry and maybe it's come apart. Of course, if there's kids jumping up and down on it, that'd be a lot of it, too. but I'd bring it up, say, hey, maybe our communications got crossed here. Maybe you thought we were just going to be, sitting here with some pillows or something, but we're actually going to have, a lot of basically a rumpus room going on here. So maybe we better upgrade to a double layer or something like that. So, I would bring it up and I'm sure he'll work with you. He or she will work with you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah,
all
sure.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Kelly. And that's, you come here obviously to give us a little social advice as well, but do you think that that's often a problem? People do approach contractors or people who've done work with them with an accusatory tone.
Yes.
And I would guess things often go south from there.
I'm just as guilty as anybody else on that, because sometimes you sit on it and you stew on it and you get madder and madder and madder. And then a lot of times, especially for me, I make a complete idiot out of myself when I start blithering about how mad I am, and it was actually something, maybe it was, a product issue, and the builder had, somebody had absolutely no control over it. But, yeah, you want to go in there as positive as you possibly can, and you're going to get a lot farther, you're going to get a lot better job. But, try to be as nice as you possibly can.
Home improvement expert and manners expert as well, Bill McAnally, here with us. Touchy-feely here with us today on Talk of Iowa, ready to take your calls at 866-780-9100. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today to kick off 2013. Susan is on the line at 866-780-9100 with a question from Muscatine. Hi, Susan.
Hi there.
Hi.
This is my question. I live in a one-story house. However, several years ago, on the south side of the house, it was dug out. So now it's sort of a one-and-a-half-story house. I have a walkout basement to my backyard. Now, 2 years ago, I decided I was going to do some radon testing. The middle part of the basement, where the bay window and the door is located to the backyard, it tested out at 2.3 picocuries.
Yeah.
Then this year, I had the left side of the basement, which is basically a storage area, tested. It came out at 21.4 picocuries. And I still have to have the right side of the basement where the guest bedroom and utility room are located tested. I'm going to do that this year. But my question for you is, I have a funny feeling I should probably do some radon mitigation. However, how does one know whether one is getting ripped off or not? This is new territory for me. And if the house, the levels are spotty, the storage room appears to be the worst. I don't know about the bedroom or the utility room yet. Mm-hmm. But let's say it's just the one area that is the highest, is 20-some picocuries. How does one go about evaluating whether I'm getting a good job done or not?
Well, you'll want to do a lot of, checking on references and that.
Okay.
On them. But, a lot of times, it really depends on the time of year. There's really no rhyme or reason with radon, which is really, really kind of funny. It's a gas. You can have, just like you said, you could have 21 in one room and two in another. But the room where you had the 2.3, it might have been a lot leakier to the outside because it had the bay window and it had the door. But that person, when they put in a mitigation system, they will be depressurizing the entire slab. So every area underneath the floor and around the foundation, the gases will be pulling towards that pipe to evacuate the gases out the roof. You just want to make sure that they've had training and do get a lot of, get some estimates. Get three different estimates from people and make sure that they are going to run it out the roof and not out rim joist or band joist, you know, that's like, say, it in between the floor joists. You want it out of the roof.
Why is that?
Well, the EPA requires that, okay, for one thing. But, you know, sometimes going out the roof, you can put in a passive system if they maybe have lower numbers, but they will be putting a fan in to this one. Hopefully, do you have a sump pump in the house?
Yes, I do.
Okay, that, you know, just by guessing, they'll probably be running from that area.
Okay.
But, you know, if one price is a lot higher than somebody else, there's, you know, there might be something wrong. But it's a fairly simple installation. It really is. It's really, you know, one thing about it, it's really kind of hard to rip people off on this one because there's not a whole lot of parts to it. And okay, everybody's pretty much the same. But get a lot of references.
All right. Susan, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Jim on the line. And Spencer, hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. A couple things.
All right.
Paint thinner will dissolve wax.
Okay.
So I know I use like a steam iron and paper towels to get wax out of fabric and rugs and stuff. But if you get it on anything else, like a piece of furniture or the wall like that, paint thinner will just dissolve it like it was nothing.
All right, and that might be
easy. See, there we go.
Yeah.
That's really,
we need
excellent.
You on speed dial on those, Jim, so that then
no
then we
problem. And, you know, on that window seat, you know, when they do that glue up, a lot of times this material, it's pretty sound, but then as time goes on, the boards start to shrink.
Yeah.
And I guess if I was a builder, I would look for a quality piece of plywood for that, or you might ask those guys to use fasteners with slotted holes so that, like screws with pan heads or something, so that doesn't shrinkage doesn't tear that joint apart. It'll crack that board if it's fairly wide just from shrinkage.
Yeah, and you never know what the temperature differences are there either on those windows, because if, you know, if it's a window seat, we don't know if it's insulated. And there's so many variables. Yeah, plywood would be a good solution for that.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot for
thanks,
your call.
Jim.
Next up is Bruce in Des Moines. Hi, Bruce.
Yes, we installed a new toilet stool, and I can't seem to get the flapper to seal. We did purchase a new flapper to put in. What do you suggest?
Is it when you look down in there and you're looking at that flapper, does it come up, and is it sometimes catching on the chain? When you flip the handle, it's usually has like a chain or, you know, that lifts the flapper. Is that catching on it, or is it catching it on the ball?
I will watch it closer, but it doesn't leak all the time. Every so often, it'll shoot more water in the bowl.
Yeah, because some of them, it seems like that flapper's sitting at a little bit too much of an angle, like height-wise. Okay. Like when you're looking down at it, you know, you'll have the supply riser on the left, probably, and then the right-hand side. If it gets a little bit of that film on the bottom, especially from the water, I notice that sometimes you get enough, you know, I've got to clean the bottom of that flapper off so it seals on the porcelain and clean that porcelain off, because it gets just enough of that film from the water that it doesn't seal.
Okay.
And especially if it isn't, I don't like those insulated tanks. If there might be a piece of that insulation stuck in there too, where they foam the inside of the tank out to make it so it doesn't get any condensation.
Okay.
I check that too, because that's. I'm glad you called today, because that's what I was running into yesterday. Same thing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bruce. And next up, let's go to Gary in Dubuque. Hi, Gary.
Yes, Terry, actually.
Oh. Hi. What's your question?
Hi. Oh, I have two questions. First of all, I was told recently by my HVAC person when they came out and serviced my furnace that I should get rid of my pleated air filter and put something cheap in there, because that pleated air filter actually prevents proper airflow in the home.
Okay.
I'm also told by my allergist, put a pleated air filter in there, and the higher the number, the better, because it helps your allergies.
Right.
And I don't know which way to go, and this is especially interesting because I've been using the same company for years, and they've never said anything before until now. And they say, oh, we've got other products we can sell you that help with your allergies. So I don't know if it's what they're telling me is the truth, or what they're telling me is to sell me another product. I guess I don't know which way to go.
No, I'm just guessing they probably went to some, there's some training going around the state, systems analysis and verification of efficiency. It's called SAVE training. And part of that training is There's a really dramatic demonstration of how pleated filters cut the airflow down for your heating and cooling system so they're not operating at what they're rated.
Okay.
So, you know, we did go through a lot of those pleated filters thinking we've got to catch everything, you know, that's going through, all the particulate, the mold spores, everything. But then that poor furnace is sitting there just, you know, you can hear it squeaking trying to pull air through all the pleats once they get a little bit of dirt on them. And so what I know your allergist is saying go with the pleated, and there are some different types of filters. They may have to what they may have to do is you can ask your HVAC person if they can maybe widen it out to go with a wider filter so that there's less restriction, but yet there's pleats. Or there is some other equipment you may want to ask them about. But really the only way to get the airflow that you need is usually these really thin filters. So what I've done in my house is I had a very good high-rated filter too, and I'm just replacing it more often with a less expensive one. But if you do have allergies, there's your allergist. You know, you have to clean that air. So you may be looking at changing the system so that you can get a wider system of filters in there. And I know I'm not really making a whole lot of sense, really, but no. So that you can get more airflow, that you have the same cubic feet per minute going through that heating and cooling system so that it can operate at its, you know, design performance. But yet you still have to be able to stop those pollutants. So you're just creating more surface area by adding more pleats so that it can get through. But I'm a firm believer, though, that you do have to have that air clean. And so if you have bad allergies, you know, you may be looking at some different air cleaning equipment that they can incorporate into the ductwork. But, you know, this is a really big issue right now in Iowa. It really is, because when I was over there on Missouri River looking at all these houses that had a lot of mold, mm-hmm. you know, I'd say, okay, you've got to get, you know, one with a real high MERV rating, you know, something that catches a lot of particulate. You drop that in, and all of a sudden now your furnace, you know, is just struggling to work. And so we're kind of in this wishy-washy area right now, is what can we possibly do? And I think you're going to see a lot of design changes in the next couple of years and recommendations on what's to be done.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of a political, almost like a political answer. I talked a lot, but didn't really say a lot. But I would get with your HVAC person and say, you know, hey, I do have these allergies. So what can we do?
All right, Terry, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we're going to go to Caroline in West Des Moines. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, I'm calling about our bathroom sinks in our house. The stopper area down at the bottom and have gotten all corroded.
Okay.
And I wondered, is there any way to replace those or fix them, or what can I do?
Yeah, they're easy to replace if you want to replace. I don't know if they're pitted, then I would replace them. But you can buy that specific section, any of the big box stores, or have your plumber replace them. What's really handy is just take your cell phone and take a picture of it so they know exactly what you're looking for, and then get underneath and take a picture of what's there underneath the sink.
Okay.
And hold a tape measure up next to it so that they can get a length and really be able to help you and not, you know, be stuck in the aisle and trying to guess the equipment that you need. That's what's really nice about cell phones, is being able to have those pictures to show this is how long this one is. This is the diameter of this piece. This is the brand name. That's what's going to help you. But it's a fairly simple process to replace those.
Well, how'd you get it out?
Well, they unscrew on the bottom of the sink. There's a screw that holds those in place.
Okay.
Yeah, if you look underneath it, you know, it's kind of, when you get underneath, just hold your cell phone flat and shoot a picture straight up, and you'll be able to see how it's all attached.
Great.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks a lot for your call, Caroline. And next up, let's go to Charlotte in Charles City. And Charlotte, you have another wax problem?
Uh-oh. I do. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Where's Jim at? I need him on this.
Right. We have a fireplace that has the artificial stone.
Okay.
And that color on that stone doesn't go all the way through. And on the hearth, I was burning a candle, and some of it was inside a holder, but some of it leaked out onto the hearth. And I don't know. It's been on there for quite some time, because I just don't have a clue how to get it off without ruining the paint finish. I don't know if you know these, you know, the artificial stones like the Durangos, yeah, and those types of things.
Yeah. You know, I was also thinking about it, how big of a spot is it?
Oh, it's pretty narrow, but it's probably 4 inches long.
You know, I was thinking because the thinner is the last thing you want to use in that because then you'd stain the stone.
Yeah.
I would try ice. Put
and break
ice
it off.
And break it off. So get some ice, get an ice cube and try that and just do a little bit at a time and then kind of flake it off with like a knife and just take it off a little chunk at a time.
Okay. I have tried with a knife just scraping a little bit of off. So it's not a real thick surface. It's very, okay. very thin now. I've gotten it down. So I'll try the ice. Hopefully that'll take the remainder off.
You'd want to put ice in a bag or something because you don't want the moisture there at the same time.
That's a good point.
Right.
Glad you said that one, too.
Apparently, this is just my area.
It's a team deal. Yeah, okay. but, you know, if you do, it's pretty easy to match that color, no matter what stone it is.
Oh, okay.
You can go get some touch-up paint. And even though it's a paint, you can still get in there and fill it. Like even some of these wood fillers, you'll know it's there, but nobody else will.
Right. Okay.
Don't be too worried about it because stone's pretty forgiving on colors.
I wonder if the manufacturer of the stone has touch-up paint.
They may have. Not really a paint, but they may have a touch-up mortar. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Right.
There you go.
Okay.
Good idea.
Maybe I'll check on that. All right. Thank you so much.
Good luck, Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
You know, we got Jim and Charlotte on our speed dials. Help us out here.
There we go. Paul's on the line next from Bettendorf. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Hi.
Yeah, I've got my girlfriend bought a house up in the East Village of Davenport, and it has beautiful wood floors, but they're just dull, and every product that we've tried just doesn't make them shine like we'd like. So I was wondering if there was any product that you could recommend.
Is it a laminate flooring, or is it the old original?
No, it's the old original floor.
Oh, yeah. Tell you what, if you go to... you know, I'm just picking one, like, say, Sherwin-Williams or someone like that, or someone that really Lumber Liquidators. I think they may even have one over there. They'll tell you the exact product. They'll different, you know, like if you want like a satin, or if you want the thing to really pop like a bar top, you know, you tell them what you want to look at. And then the thing is, too, is they're going to – if you can have a sample of that piece of wood somewhere, if you have it, take it with you. Because it kind of depends on what finish they have and what kind of solvents that may have been used. You know, it'd be nice for them to be able to have an idea what's originally down so that what you put down will actually attach correctly and not possibly blister or roll off.
All right. I will give that a try.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Paul. And one more call, Eldon in Atkins. Hi, Eldon.
Good morning. I have a brief problem. We've got some older bureaus and roll-top desk that's wood on wood, and wondered if you could recommend a product that we could use to maybe make those drawers move a little easier.
You know, it was kind of funny. On all the old stuff, everybody was using old bar soap or paraffin wax.
Okay, paraffin wax?
Yeah, but a lot of them were using just the old, like an ivory soap.
And we also have a big table, 120-foot or 120-inch walnut table that has the wood rails underneath, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those are a little harder to get at. Would heavy-duty silicone work on those or some kind of a spray product?
And what town are you in?
Atkins.
I'm sorry, I'm geologically...
Near Cedar Rapids.
If you have a wood specialty shop in town or a furniture store, go there because I'm a little nervous recommending something on an old, especially a walnut. Go to a specialty wood shop that deals with tables, furniture shop, and they should have a product. I know there's a spray, but I don't think it's silicone. It's something else.
Okay, Eldon, thanks a lot for your call. And Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm going to have to work on my finishing stuff for next month, I guess. Caught me off guard today.
Happy New Year, Bill.
Happy
thanks
New Year
so much
too.
For coming in.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow, the first Hort Day of 2013. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.